It is a joy for us to be here as well. We went south a week and a half ago trying to escape the cold. We dodged the worst of it in Pennsylvania as far as the you know, 2-degree weather. And I know that's warm for you all, but it's chilly for us. And so we were in South Carolina for the coldest weekend they'd had in, I think, 22 years, they said. And I told your pastor, it's amazing how you're in a place that's solid sand, and they don't know how to transfer from the shoulder onto the road. How hard would that be? So instead, they drive around rutting the road at about 2 miles an hour. And so it was pretty scary sometimes in some places. But being from up north, being familiar with snow and ice driving it, I like the van's hard to fishtail because it doesn't have the emergency brake like the Camry. I'm sure my wife's thankful for that. But Southerners don't know how to handle that when you do that. So I just didn't do that a whole lot. My wife yelled at me every time I did. But I was enjoying it. Anyway, I was having a good time out in the snow and the ice in South Carolina. And then we come up here and it's 10 degrees warmer than when we left South Carolina. So anyway, we have trouble with scheduling things in its proper place sometimes. But we went away to rest. We got rest and then promptly stayed. Tonight will be our sixth night in our fifth different bed in the last six nights. So we rested and then we slept in five beds in the last six nights. So you say, what does that do to you? Well, it just ups your chiropractic visits. It increases your leave taking and things like that. So other than that, it's not a big deal. But we're glad to be here. We're glad, of course, always to stay with the Battises. They've not helped us lose weight, but they've been a blessing to us. And so we're thankful for that. We're thankful to see you and see some new faces. Always a blessing to see folks we don't know here at the Black Creek Baptist Church. This is our MLK weekend, but I ain't had that right. And your pastor has lost, acquaintances over that. It'd be hard to lose a friend over that. But you lose acquaintances over having a Martin Luther King weekend. But this is the weekend that Martin Luther King's birthday is honored by the nation on Monday. So we call it Martin Luther King weekend. The pastor told me a couple months ago, he said, we gear this towards the young people. And so tonight I want to preach on the aged men in Titus chapter 2. So if you'll turn there. If you help the aged men in Titus 2, then you can help the young people. The problem with our country, the problem with our churches, is that the aged men have not been helping the young men, the aged women, and I don't know if that's the right term, but the Bible calls them aged women. They're not teaching the young women today. I want to be practical these next several nights. I'm going to preach something probably a little bit different as far as us at Black Creek Baptist Church. This is just part of the ministry that God has called us to. In Titus 2, he says, but speak thou the things which become sound doctrine. You say, are they not sound doctrine? Well, they will be when they're received. Sound doctrine is only as sound as if you're willing to receive it. It might be good doctrine, it might be right doctrine, but if you don't receive it and you don't seal it in your heart, it's not sound anymore. So he said, speak the things that become sound doctrine. You say, well, my pastor is very doctrinally sound. Well, why don't you become doctrinally sound?
Right.
Why don't you receive these things, take these things, put them in your heart, apply them to your life. But he said, speak thou the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men. Now, you could look around and there's some of you would look and say, well, he's an aged man. I've learned that increases the older you get. I looked in the mirror right before I came down from the Battises. I did not look in the mirror and go, ah, there's one of the aged men. And I'll be honest, Brother Wilcox may not have done that. He may not have said, no, this is not an aged man. This men much older than I. And I believe that is who the aged men are. Some of you look at Tim McVeigh and say, there's an aged man. Most of us look at Brother Maury and say, there's an aged man, a man of great years behind him. I'll leave you alone, Brother Neil. And so it is that matter of those that are older than you. And the reason we look at it in that light, if you will, the context, is because you're looking at them for the very purpose of what the Bible tells us next, that they be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, in charity, in patience. Now that's all the instruction the Bible gave the aged man. That's it. Well, that's not too bad, is it? All he has to do in his life, it's as simple as be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, in charity, in patience. That's it. Piece of cake. I got this. I mean, my goodness, I'm sound, I'm temperate, I'm patient, I'm, well, mostly, I have charity towards people, I mean, most of the time, No, he said, teaches the aged men, he said, I want you to be these things. The sound doctrine will bring this out of you, aged men. This will reveal in you these things. When you put sound doctrine to practice, these things will come out of your life. Aged men. I believe it's aged men because there's experience involved. I don't think there's some of these things that can be learned, and we'll get to that in a moment. Some of these things just can't be learned just off of a piece of paper. Some of the things are just practiced. You say, well, I can just be patient. The Bible tells me to be patient. I can read the Bible and be patient. And if you can, by the way, thank the Lord for
that. That's right. Yes, that's right.
It's a little bit harder than, and by the way, these trials that come into our life are for our patience. They are to build us in these things. But if we pass the test and don't have to go through another one, it's wonderful. You say, well, I'm temperate in all things. That's wonderful. Marvelous. How's your pride? Just checking. Doing okay. I've got all these things down pat. Well, that's great, aged man, but what did it take to get there? What are you willing to teach these younger men, the lessons you've learned to get to this place? And let me say to you young people, it takes a younger man that's willing not only to listen, but to follow that example.
That's good. Yes, sir.
And today we live in a day when I don't see a lot of young men wanting to follow an example of godly men.
That's right.
I got a preacher friend of mine who is a black preacher in the Carolinas. Doctrinally, I believe he's sound in his manner of life. He is sound in the practice of religion, in pure religion, that is. In that practice, I believe he's sound. I believe he's a good brother. But I remember him talking to me just not long ago about his two sons. And he said, Brother McVeigh, I want you to pray for my sons. And he made this statement. He said, I have failed in raising them to the point that they'll follow in my footsteps. And I said, Brother, I'm not trying to make excuse or give you leeway. If you know the failures of your life, you know what God has dealt with you about the failures of your life. But I see a major failure in the homes and lives of people today. And the young men following the footsteps of their father. I tried to put my finger on it for years. I believe a lot of it boils down to this. They're not seeing aged men following the example that is given here in Titus 2. There's too many little holes in the armor, too many dings in the armor, too many dents, too many niches, too many openings in their life. Where as a young man looks at them and they see the words that speak what the Bible speaks, but what they don't see is a lifestyle that matches up with what they say they believe the Bible says.
Yeah,
I believe it's why you don't see a lot of young men following in the footsteps of aged men. And it's one word, hypocrisy. They see a life of do as I say, but not as I do. Let me read this passage. We'll use this later in the week with the Lord's help. The aged women, whatever you do, men, young men, be wise in this. Don't ever point out an aged woman. Let them determine who they are. Amen. Likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. Young men, likewise exhort to be sober-minded, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. That's a lot of challenge to a lot of people. There's a lot of there for each and every one of us. There's things there that will help us in our Christian life if we will take heed unto these things. I want to go to Proverbs 1 from there. Just use that as just kind of a springboard into what we're going to deal with tonight with the Lord's help. Proverbs 1, I want to read the first 9 verses of the opening of the Proverbs of Solomon here. As he deals with not only as a son of David, but then to his sons as well. And he writes in this wise, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretations, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck. Gives instruction to his son. He was an aged man, if you will. An aged man who is giving instruction to the young men coming along behind him. And I want you to see at least twice, he says this in verse 5 and verse 8. Hear. He said a wise man will hear. And because of his hearing, what? He'll increase learning. Secondly, he said, son, hear the instruction of thy father. Open your ears to hear. Can I say you need to be in the right place to hear? You need to be in the right environment to hear. There's times you need to remove obstacles that prevent you from hearing. I've been in church services where folks have complained later on of the screaming baby or the murmuring children or the restlessness behind them. And I've often thought in my mind, and I usually don't say this personally, but in my mind, I think if I'm that desperate to hear, I think I would find a way to move to where I could hear. If I really wanted to hear instruction, I would find a way to get to where instruction was. If I had driven miles to hear a great speaker, if I was there at Gettysburg and Mr. Lincoln mounted the podium at Gettysburg, I would do everything in my power to get as close as I could to make sure that I could hear the words that he spake. I think a lot of people are pretending to hear.
Yes, sir.
They're acting like they're listening, but their ear is not inclined to hear. Their ear is not prepared to hear. They're not in the right place to hear. They do not want to receive the instruction. And therefore, they do everything they can to block out the hearing. They'll put the blank stare. They'll go through the motions of pretending. I've even seen people go as far as to catch little snippets of the message so they can repeat them back to the speaker to try to impress him that indeed they were hearing, yet the knowledge and understanding has not gone from here to here, so it hasn't transgressed from here to here. You know it hasn't gone in here. They're just looking for little pieces, little nuggets, if you will. I've been in services where people have read a 3-point outline back that their pastor preached the week before. But they have no idea what the message was about. They've written down the 3 points. They've written down the educational aspect, the part that appeals to the mind, but they haven't heard. It'd be a shame to take notes on every point and every subpoint to write the points and the subpoints and miss all that content in between that's designated for our ear. It's up to you to determine, do you want to hear? Am I in a place to listen? Do I want to take what is preached, not just this week, but in the weeks to come, in the months to come, in the years to come? Am I willing to open my ear to hear? Do I want to receive these things and let them transform me, change me? And by doing that, I must open my ear to hear. Or will I continue in this plight that I'm in of going through the motions of religion, going through the motions of sitting on the pew, but yet never applying the things I hear to my heart? He said this in verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. I don't want to be a fool when it comes to instruction. I've learned in my life, and I don't blame this, it's not an excuse. I'm still learning things concerning, if you will, the household, the maintenance of a household, the taking care of a household. I could blame my father for not being there for me, but I don't think my dad would have known anyway how to do those things. And so I've had to learn how to just do certain things. There are certain things I can't do. So the things I cannot do, I call Brother Zach. Amen. Because Brother Zach's daddy taught him how to do those things. I thank the Lord. I'm being serious about that. I said, Brother Zach, do you know how to lay carpet? He said, Brother Zach, yeah. There's nothing he can't do. I'm being honest. There's nothing he can't do. He's like, yeah. I said, well, could you help me with my carpet? Yeah. I said, well, I'm going to pay you to come up. Oh, that's okay. I said, no, I want to have, no, you're not going to come up for free. We're going to pay you something. Come up. But I need help laying carpet. Okay. So his daddy calls. He said, hey, did you tell Zach you can lay carpet? I said, yeah. He goes, brother, I don't know if he knows how to lay carpet. I said, Brother David, I said, he told me he could lay carpet. He said, brother, there's a lot of things Zach tells you he can do. Yep, he did a fine job. Thank the Lord for it, didn't he? He did a fine job for the market. We'll see on round two how he does. We'll find out. I just don't have those abilities. I don't have those skills within me to do that. When I need to do something, you know what I do? I find somebody that knows how to do it. I don't just say, hey, go do this for me. You know, I even asked Brother Zach, and for him, because of being so much younger than this aged man, you know, and having traveled with me for several years, different places, and he always kind of felt as though he was, under me in the ministry to a point. And so it's kind of hard for him to give me instruction. But I said, Zach, whatever you need, tell me, and I'll do it. So rather, you know, me, I'd be like, hey, get that. Hey, grab that. Put that over there. Bring it. Brother Zach's like, Brother McVeigh? I'm like, what? Could you possibly go out there and find me a two? And I'm like, yes, Brother Zach, just say it. Well, could you please get me? I'm like, yes, Brother Zach, I'll be glad to help you out. Amen. But I'm going to listen. He's younger than me, but I'm still going to learn from him because he's the one that knows how to do it. I had a friend of mine, still a quick story, I promise I'm done. I had a friend with stories. A friend of mine and asked about plumbing. I said, do you ever work with copper? He says, oh, yeah, all the time. He said, my house is copper. I work with copper. I said, well, you know, when you're here, can you help me with some of this? He said, yeah, I'd be glad to help you. And my kitchen ceiling still bears the evidence of him helping with a copper pipe upstairs in the bathroom. And, things were going good. He said he knew how to do copper. And I hear, honey! And I said, oh boy, what? It's raining in the kitchen. I said, okay, he doesn't know how to do copper. I didn't ask him any more for advice. How do I do copper? I didn't ask him one thing. Why? Because the evidence was that he didn't know how to do copper pipe. He might have watched it on TV. He might have done it years ago. He didn't know how to do copper pipe. So $642 later, the plumber came, fixed several things, crawled up underneath there, soldered the pipe about an hour and a half, got everything done, and he became our plumber. And I've used him several times. Why? Because I'm not crawling up in there trying to fix copper pipes. I don't want to flood my wife's kitchen again. And so I found the man that had the instruction. I learned from the man that had the instruction. And can I say this? If I went with him everywhere he went and he was willing to train me, I would learn a whole lot more training under him than I would just one time dealing with him, watching him, learning some different things. One thing I learned, they have this thing, and those of you that know these things, this isn't a shock to you, this is a shock to me. They have these things called a welding blanket. I'm trying to figure out how to solder a pipe without burning the house down. This guy's smart enough. He goes to Lowe's and buys a welding blanket, shoves it behind it, and welds it all day long. It doesn't transfer the heat into the wood. I'm too dumb to know that. If I had tried it, I would have burned the house down. That's why I didn't try it. You know, just little things you learn because you don't know these things. You don't understand these things. It would have been foolish for me to act like, oh, yeah, I got this, honey. Oh, yeah, no problem. I'm telling you, we would have been in danger. You would have been in danger. The house would have been in danger. I'd be like, honey, take the two valuables we have, you and me, and get out of the house. Because I'm in there without knowledge. I'm in there struggling with this welding torch and with old, 78-year-old oak boards welding on them or soldering on them without any kind of knowledge or wisdom. You'd be amazed how many people are operating that way today.
Yeah.
Absolutely no knowledge on the subject. Some of the greatest arguments I've ever been in have been on the streets. Concerning the things of God. Dealing with people living, and listen, this is not a slight, but this is a true statement. If you're living in a cardboard box under a bridge, by choice, you're not reasonable at best. There's something in your life that is not reasonable. And then to say, oh, I got this life thing figured out. I'm going to impart wisdom to you. I'm going to help you have understanding. I'm going to teach you some things. And then stand in the face of those that could help and spew out all of my venom and all of my garbage and all of my lack of understanding. Speak as a fool speaks. Never one time stop and listen and hear the instructions. Proverbs 22, verse 6. This is really the message tonight. That was all just trying to get us up till 20 till 8 so I could preach 20 minutes. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. And you know the verse well, and I just want to take a look at it. Train up a child. There's two things I want you to look at. There's the word train, but then there's the expression to train up. The object is the child. The motive, the method, the practice here, if you will, is to train up a child. This is my meager little look into this, and take, as you usually have to do, take what Tim McVeigh learned, make sense of it, and then go learn a lot more than what he does, because that's just the way it normally is. And I'm not being funny, I'm being honest about that. I did learn this. This is called a phrasal verb. Does anybody know what a phrasal verb is? I don't either. That's what this is called. You learned something, didn't you, Josh? Good. Train up is a verb, it's a phrase. Train up. It goes together, hand in hand. The object here, the noun, is the child. I'm going to train up this child. These two words aren't separated. They go together here. They're tied together. They're knit together. It's not just I'm going to train the child. I'm going to train up the child. I looked at that word train. Of course, train is to teach a particular skill, a type of behavior. That's what training is. Through the continuation of not only practice, but also instruction. To train someone and to teach someone are two different things. To teach is to give the instruction. Tell them, instruct them. I'm going to teach you the things that I know because I want you to grasp these things. So I'm going to stand, I'm going to teach you. To train you is to give you this understanding for you to put into practice along with the instruction. When you go to a job, the first thing in the job, they might give you a book. You open that book, you read that book. That book is going to instruct you. That book is going to teach you. That book is going to give you everything you need to know about the job. And to be honest, those of you that have had to do that, you shut the book, you sit on the shelf, you have no clue what the book just said. But yet that book is trying to teach you what you need to learn. To train you, they take not only the book, but then they take practice, they mesh them together, and they begin to train you to a particular end. If you are first time in a job, most young people I know start out fairly menial in their jobs, or those of you that have military experience, you start out fairly menial. I asked Peter if he still had to mop floors. He said, I'm still pretty low rank. I just had to laugh. I told him I was low rank for many years in my unit. When I finally got promoted, everybody else got promoted ahead of me, and I was still the low rank. I was the lowest ranking person in the unit. I was a staff sergeant. For 6 years, I was Mr. Mop. And that's what I did. He said, what did you train in? Mopping the floor. And when it comes to a heavy duty, good custom, a commercial grade mop, I can still sling a mop with the best of them. Why? Because that's what I did at work. He said, weren't you a network engineer? Yes. Well, I slung a mop. And you say, was there a book for slinging the mop? Believe it or not, I was in the military. You rest assured, there was instruction on how to mop the floor. You say, why? Because we had idiots that you couldn't show how to mop the floor. They would have soaked the floor, flooded the subfloor. The alarms would have gone off. We would have had to evacuate the site. Now you say, what site was that? It was 600 foot underground. It was called Site R. It's the Alternate National Military Command Center. And for them to evacuate the site, let's just say you were in a lot of trouble. Okay, and so you had to know how to mop the floor. So they had a book and it told you detailed instructions with illustrations how to mop the floor. And the sad thing is, there were people that their mindset was such, they couldn't read the book and figure out how to mop the floor. And they couldn't just on-the-job training to mop. They had to have the book and the training. Why? Because they were training them how to mop the floor. But there was a particular task that was required, and what it was, the distant end of that training, was a clean floor. So what did it take to get that? A mop, water, teaching, and practice. Why? Because that's the requirement to have a clean floor. Now, my wife, through the marvel of technology, she has a steam cleaner. And it's a marvel of tech. I would have loved to have had that in the military. Can you imagine, they say, mop the floor. You're like, yes, sir. You grab the steam cleaner and zzz, buzz around. You know, just imagine. But no, we didn't have that luxury. And so when he says to train up a child, there's instruction. But that instruction accompanies practice for a distant end. There's a goal in sight. It's not the overall training. It's not just, hey, listen, we're going to train our child. There's a goal to reach with that training. Train up a child. That means you're going to take that child, teach them, instruct them, put this thing into practice, because in the distant future, there's an objective, and the objective is this: the way he should go. What is that way? It's the way of peace. It's the way of righteousness. Jesus said it's the way of truth. To train them for one objective in life, that they walk in the ways of a holy God. That's what every step of parenthood is. Training them for that distant end. There is a misunderstanding, there's a misnomer, and I'm going to be real clear about this, because there's a lot of people that get on a spiritual high horse about these things. They say, well, if you had trained your children right, they wouldn't have turned out like, and you just fill in the blank, like such, 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 and such. Can I say this? Train up a child in the way he should go when he is old. He will not depart from it when he's old. But you realize that child still has a free will. They will do what they want to do. But your obligation is to train them so that they don't. It is not just discipline, although discipline is quite a large portion of that. But training them up in the way they should go, again with the idea that I'm going to teach them, but I'm also going to, with hands-on, show them the way that they should go. Here's the object. Back there at the back door, outside that back door, you cannot see it. It's blind to us. It's invisible. We cannot tell it's there because we just can't see us reaching that point. But behind that door is righteousness. Behind that door is peace. Behind that door is truth. And starting out, I need to train and teach and instruct and use an example. Every day, I'm training up that child. Not just training them, but training up that child. There's a goal in mind. It's not just training. Can I use a very simple illustration? It's a term that most people use for training. What is potty training? What is the goal? My wife and I soon, one of these days, will learn. The goal, for one thing, is to get rid of the pamper bill. Is it not? Those things aren't cheap. And if for no other reason, I can be pragmatic about that, it will benefit us financially to train up our little potty. Why? What's the goal? To get her off the pampers. To get her on the potty. To get the bed dry. There's a lot of goals there. So what do? You instruct. You teach. You work with them. Moms, you can say, is it easy? It's black and white. Is it not black and white, Sister Jody? It's as simple as this. I'm telling you right now, do not pee the diaper one more time. Yes, sir. And when they're old, They were not departing. But what happens? The teaching must continue. The practice must continue. And all of a sudden, one day, it just dawns on Mom, the pull-up's dry. Life is good. Let's have another one. We'll start all over again. But what is the purpose? You have a goal in mind, and I want to train up, potty train up my child to reach that place. So what does it take? I see in there, I didn't define this as, but I see in there persistence, consistency. There's a lot of instances in there. Being constant, continually trying to reach that goal, continually trying to teach, to train, to practice, to reach a common goal for the betterment of our house. And by the way, it's always good to train up for the betterment of your home. If there's a problem in the home, can I say this? It needs to be trained up properly. If the problem is Dad, you need to get with God and train yourself up.
Yes.
Properly. You say, I keep losing my temper, preacher. Persistence. Practice. Truth. Teaching. Preacher, I just can't have patience. I've lost my patience. Persistence. Training. Teaching. Because when Dad gets it, the children get it. When Mom gets it, the children get it. How can you train someone when you can't train yourself?
Yes.
Preach a friend of mine. This is going to be for a little off for some of you, but that's never really bothered me, but he said, and this is a true story, I'm not making this up, I'm not trying to be crude, just tell you what he said. He said, brother, how do you talk to somebody in your church? He said, when the child's sitting there in church eating things that they shouldn't eat. He said, how do you address that? I said, preacher, you don't. There's probably a bigger problem.
That's right.
Good. Yep.
That's what I told him. There's a bigger problem that needs addressed, not what they're eating. When I say what they're eating, they're snacking in church. There's bigger problems. Is it part of training? Yes, but you realize how much deeper it is than that. When my mom trained me along those lines and many, many other lines, there was a lot more things it took to get even to that. That just became a byproduct, did it not? I mean, there came a point in time through all the training, all those things. I don't know what age, 6, 7, 8 years old. Quit chewing your fingernails. Get your fingers out of your mouth. Quit picking your nose. You know, quit scratching your feet. Get your hand out of your armpit. I mean, just all the, you moms, you know what I'm talking about. Just all those things. It was somewhere in the training line, these things just became automatic. It was constant, 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 constant. Get your fingers out of your mouth. Get your fingers out of your mouth. Get your fingers out of your mouth. Get your finger out of your nose. Get your finger out of your nose. Hey, stop that. I mean, just constant. It's teaching. It's instructing. It's sometimes you feel like you're badgering. But it's a continuance. Now, I want to put that in the spiritual realm when we're done. It's the continuance of teaching them God's law. There's never a time that child should get away with telling a lie. Never.
Yes.
You say, oh, Tim McVeigh, you don't have children. You know what you're talking about. It's okay. That little girl lied to me? Better believe she will. Will she get away with it? I sure hope she doesn't. Not if her daddy finds out. Why? Because it's that not only training them, but it's the instruction, the continuance. Do not lie. Do not steal. Do not covet. Obey your parents. Can I say this, Mom and Dad? Teaching them to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, How do you do that? Continuing in yourself to love the Lord thy God with all your heart. Every thought, every action. You see, I just can't get there. I can't arrive there. I'm not at that place yet. Train up the child in the way he should go. How do you do that? Follow me. Dad, if you're a carpenter, you want your daughter or your son, hopefully your son, to be a carpenter. How do you teach them to be a carpenter? You say, follow me.
Walk.
A young man came to me and said, Brother McVeigh, I want to be a preacher. I feel like God's called me to preach. You know what I'm going to say? Follow me.
Yes, ma'am.
The Apostle Paul said on this wise, follow me as I'm following Christ. How do we train up this child? Follow me. But my children are so angry. I hate to break the news to you. They're probably following you. My children are so rebellious. I had a man testify one time. Pray for my children. They're so rebellious. I thought, I'm not praying for your children. Pray for you, Dad.
Yes.
Yep.
Dad's a rebel. That's the problem. Train up. There's a goal in sight. Behind that door is righteousness. There's peace. There's hope. All of those things are behind that door. And if you can take that child and guide them and lead them and teach them and instruct them, it's a lifetime of instructing. And then one day, Mom, Dad, you walk them down to the marriage altar. Well, Dad, you walk her down. I guess it'd be kind of weird to walk the boy down. You put that little girl's hand, that man's hand. You know what you do? Hands off. I've trained them, I've taught them, I've done everything I know. Now it's in God's hands.
Yes.
And it's amazing how a mom can't go back and instruct that boy anymore. Why? Because he's joined that woman, he's become one flesh. They're twain. Dad can maybe give him instruction if he's seeking instruction. He go back to his father for wisdom. But for the most part, it's hands off. I've taught you everything I know. Now you learn everything you can. You take this woman, you love her, you treasure her, you cherish her. Young ladies, Daddy walks you down there to the altar, he takes your hand, he's done hopefully everything in his power to raise you to love the Lord thy God. And he puts your hand in that stinky, filthy boy's hand.
That's right.
And he says, you love her, you take care of her, you cherish her. You're like, okay. No, I took it real serious. I'm just saying that because Mrs. Gearhart's here. I took it real serious. I told him, I said, I'll do my absolute best to cherish her, to love her, to take care of her. You know why? Because everything her mom has taught her, everything her daddy taught her, everything my mom and my dad taught me, it's all culminated in this moment where two months from tonight, Lord willing, give or take a couple days, McVeigh's going to take all the knowledge of all these people and take all of this practical guidance is going to become a reality. And the way is worth the sacrifice. Would there be any greater joy than to see your children walk in peace, walk in righteousness, walk in truth? Is there any greater joy in a parent's life than to see their children follow God? Train them up. Can I say this? There's three parts to that. I'm going to just rehash them quickly. The object is the child. The object, that sentence, is the child. Train up. The verbiage there is train them up. Train up who? That child. Where? In the way they should go. You can train them. You can teach them. You can instruct them. But if the way is not straight, it's a disaster. The sports fields are filled across America with moms and dads well-meaning, but their way is wrong. Can I tell you, those of you kind of pondering that, can I tell you what sports brought me? Memories. And I don't live on memories. Can I kind of brag on myself? When I was 12, I made the All-Star team. Is anybody impressed?
Look to you now.
Thank you, Randy. When I was 16, I got kicked off the tennis team. Now, Randy probably would be impressed with that. You know what that brought me in life? Nothing. I trained, I worked, I studied, I'd read books, I'd do drills, I did everything I could to be the absolute best sports star in my little tiny ecosphere of sports realm that I possibly could be. Some of you didn't know this, and I'm going to tell a secret. Please, don't let this out on me. Please, I'm not going to sign autographs, nothing like that. Most of you did not. I actually tried out for the Pittsburgh Pirates. A lot of you did not know that. That's a true story. I'm not making that up. You know why I got tried out for the Pittsburgh Pirates? Because they had an open tryout, and it said on the sign, "Everyone, welcome." My wife didn't even know that until a couple months ago. I tried out for the Pittsburgh Pirates. I got it, took two swings. They said, "Next." That was it. My tryout was over. My shot at fame, my shot at glory, my shot at wealth, it was over. You know what benefited me in life? Nothing. That's why he said, train up a child in the way he should go. Can you imagine the awfulness? And if it was you, just take it for what it is. Being Miss Anything. Miss Dairy Festival. Miss Garlic Festival. Miss Cheddar Cheese New York 1997. I mean, just pick one. Homecoming Queen, Prom. How fleeting. How shallow. When you realize what it took to get there, the paint, the tanning bed, the gym, the starvation, the money spent, all of those things, and you get there. And how fleeting is that 50 years later when you look in the mirror? Just being honest with you. I was Miss Garlic Festival in 1964. What benefits? But when you train up a child the way she'd go, this great benefit. When he's old, he'll not depart from it. My first job was as a janitor at an elementary school in the summer. I had to clean up. Well, basically they made me clean, and I'm being honest with you, the bottom of the desk. So nobody wanted to clean the bottom of the desk. I was 14, I didn't care. It didn't bother me. It was elementary school. Crayons were the best thing I cleaned off the bottom of the desk. I'd go out for hours, I'd scrub desks. I'd clean off the bottom of the desk. I'd get another desk, I'd scrub the bottom of the desk, I'd clean the bottom of the desk. And by the way, I was doing it for $3.35 an hour, that was minimum wage at the time, which at that time for me was a lot of money. But I worked for $3.35 an hour scrubbing those desks day in and day out. And you know what I learned from that job? I learned how to work.
Amen.
I learned some character. I remember being late to baseball practice because I was working, and all the other boys were like, "Where have you been? Where have you been?" You know, I had a good time, they're all playing. And I still remember reaching my pocket, feeling that paycheck in my pocket. In the back of my mind, going, "Boy, that sure was better than baseball. Boy, that sure was better." Now I look back and look at my life that God has put together, the wife God's given me, the home God has given us, the life of Jesus Christ. And I go, "Boy, all that didn't amount to anything in my life. But boy, this training in righteousness, it sure amounted to a whole lot. This training in the peace of God, boy, it amounted to a whole lot of things. This training that God instilled in me, that God put in, this training that God provided for me to train me up in the way I should go, that benefited us a whole lot in my life." This is the message tonight. For the aged men, aged women, it's too late. But some of you are aged to somebody.
Yep.
That you could help.
That's right.
There are people in this church, I believe there's young people in this church, that will listen. who they need, someone they can follow. In a surreal world of my own making, I'll just use Brother and Sister Hain as an example if I can, not to embarrass them, but when I was a little girl, about 3, rather than us take the responsibility, Brother Hain, Sister Hain, we're going to bring her to your house and just let her follow you all around.
I thought that.
Thank you, Sister Hain. And we're going to say, honey, learn from them. And if they get tired there, we take them over to the Ashworth house and say, honey, don't talk to the boys, but learn from Mr. and Mrs. Ashworth. Learn from them. I'm going to take her around, and I'm going to learn from my pastor. I'll say, Brother Black, don't you want to watch our daughter, little Jemmy, for 2 or 3 months and raise her up and train her up? And he'll say, no. It's your job. And all that weight's going to fall squarely on my chest, and it's going to dawn on me one day. Oh, goodness, this is my responsibility. I have to bear this till the day I die. But I have a promise. If I do it, when they're old, they won't depart from it. That's his promise.
Amen.
For John, for the Hain.